We're in a new year. I know, I'm feeling the same way. Who cares? Right? We're in this new year. I thought, start thinking about new year resolutions, and I just went, whatever. Whatever. I used to do that with the youth each year. I would bring the youth in, and I'd have them fill out a form. And it was quite a bit fun for them because they would fill out, and I'd ask them different types of questions like, who was your best friends this year? What did you do this year for vacation? What's your shoe size? And when they were like kids, especially the boys going into 9th, 10th grade, their shoe size was like 4 one year and 12 the next. And so we put their address on it, and we'd mail it to them the next year. So it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun to do that. But then as you get older, you just kind of, I looked back at my old New Year's resolutions, and all the way up until 2020, they were okay. I didn't make any of them, but at least I tried. And then after 2020, it was just like, who cares? Then 2021 hit, and it was like, I really don't care now. And so it just keeps going on and on. And after all these past 2 years, I'm just like, Lord, I don't even know what I want for this year. 2022, I thought I knew what I wanted for the past few years, and now I'm just kind of like, you know what, Lord? I just want to hear your voice better. And he's going, isn't that what you should do every year? I'm like, yeah, and I do. But I felt like as I was in my prayer time this past week, I said, Lord, I just want to hear your voice better. And I felt like I heard this, then stop listening with your ears and start listening with your heart. And you know what? You can't even spell heart without hear. And so I just started thinking about how can I listen with my heart to people? Because when I listen with my ears, I can easily get distracted and I can easily just blow people off when I'm just only listening with my ears. So I was looking at this out of Mark 5, and I'm going to go over a story here out of Mark 5. You can also find it in Matthew 9 and Luke 8, but we're going to look at Mark 5 here, and let's try to listen maybe with our hearts as we read through this part. I'm going to read Mark 5, 21 to 24. It says, and when Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered around him, and he was beside the sea. Then came one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and seeing him, he fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, saying, my little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her, so that she may be made well and live. And he went with him, and a great crowd followed him and thronged about him. Now, this guy that's a synagogue ruler, his name was Jairus. And this guy, he was the administrator of the synagogue. Nothing happened in the synagogue without him knowing it or without it going through him first. So he was a very important man, and most likely he was wealthy. He had a lot of money. It was an important part. And so here he is, and he's got a problem here, and most likely he opposed Jesus with all of his heart. He was one of the religious leaders of their day, and he opposed Jesus. He did not like him. He would have considered him a dangerous heretic, and he would have absolutely been going and maybe have ruined this guy's way of life because they made a lot of money through the synagogue. So he could lose all this money, so he probably hated Jesus. And you can imagine the fight that he's going through in his heart. His daughter is dying, and he's got to go to this guy who he probably considers an enemy. And he's stuck there, and he's trying to internally, externally, he's trying to figure out what I'm going to do here. And he finds himself on his knees in front of Jesus in the middle of a crowd. What would it take to get you to your knees in front of a crowd to a person that you probably considered an enemy? That's the most desperate you could ever be right there. That's some real desperation. That's some serious stuff going on. So you can imagine the fight that he finds himself. So he has to absolutely, he's got to really check his heart here. What would make a guy do this? He had to put away his prejudice. He had to put away his dignity. He had to put away his pride. What makes anybody willing to do that? A sick child. A child that's dying. I mean, think about it. He has to put all these things, right? He has to put all these things away. It's kind of like in 2 Kings 5 where Naaman is the commander of the army of the king of Aram. And Naaman is struggling. I don't have that pulled up here. I'm not going to pull it up, but I'm just going to give you the overview of Naaman and his story. He's the commander of an army of the king of Aram, and there was one problem. He was very, very, very popular. Very popular. And so he's sitting there, and he is got a problem. It's leprosy. He's got a leprosy. Look at that kid. That kid is cute. That kid is cute. I mean, think about it. I watched that kid when it came in, and I'll tell you what, she sang louder than most of y'all. I'll tell you that. Beautiful little girl. Beautiful little girl. We're glad you're here. Glad you're here. So here we have Naaman. He's got leprosy. Well, he has this servant girl that's working inside of his, he's got this servant girl that's working inside of his home that he had captured from Israel when they went about raiding. Can you imagine that? Imagine that today. Hey, James, what'd you do today? Oh, I went to burn it and raided it. It was fun. I even found a little servant girl. She's mine now. Right? I mean, just think of that. That's so different than what we grew up with. It was just so different. And so they raid Israel, take this little girl, and he's got leprosy. And the little girl speaks up to her master, and she says, I know a guy in Israel that can heal you. Now imagine a commander of an army listening to a servant girl. Did I even ask you if you could talk? But I think I know somebody that can heal you. Oh, speak up. Speak up. So he goes to his king and he says, there's apparently someone in Israel that can heal me. King says, well, then go. So he sends him to the king of Israel. So he goes to the king of Israel, and he says, I need you to heal my servant, my commander of my army. And the king of Israel freaks out. He goes, who told you I could do this? He's just trying to pick a fight. He wants to go to war. So then this guy named Elisha, you may have heard of him, great prophet of the Old Testament. He says, hey, listen, I heard about your dilemma. Bring him over to here so that he'll know that there's a real prophet here in Israel. So he's like, okay. So he takes his entourage and he takes them over to Elisha's house. And he's like, I have arrived. Here I am. Come worship me. Basically, that's in his heart what's happening here. And Elisha goes, he sends out his servant. He says, now you go out there and you tell him that if he wants to be healed, he just goes, washes in the Jordan 7 times, he'll be good. Well, isn't that good news? So all of a sudden, he has to put away his prejudice. He has to put away his pride, and he just go do it. But he leaves there, and he starts arguing and just with his servants and saying, what, did you believe that guy? He didn't even come out and look at me and talk to me. I thought he was going to come out here and that he was just going to wave his hand over my leprosy and cure me. It was done. And then he told me to go wash in the Jordan. Do you know how disgusting the Jordan is? It's dirty water. The rivers back home are beautiful. And he says, go wash in the disgusting water and I'm going to be healed? I'm out of here. And his servants come and go, what if he told you to do something great and crazy? Wouldn't you do it to be healed? What if he told you to do the hokey pokey standing on one leg? What if he told you to go run around the building in your underwear? You would probably do it to be healed. He's just asking you to do something simple. And he had to put his prejudice away. He had to put his pride away. He had to put his dignity away and go, you know what? You're right. And so it's kind of like Naaman. He goes and he washes in the Jordan and he comes out healed. He comes out healed. So here we have Jairus, who is in this predicament here. And you're just thinking, I mean, think about who he was, this synagogue ruler. Why didn't he just send a messenger to Jesus? His daughter is dying. Why not stay with your daughter and just send a messenger over there? Why didn't some of his friends, go over there and implore Jesus to come and heal this girl? You know what I think it is? I think it's the fact that he didn't have anyone that would go. I think that he had to go because no one else would. All of his friends would have been synagogue leaders and rulers and chief priests and Pharisees. And they didn't believe in Jesus. But you know what? That did not stop this guy. That did not stop this guy. And I love the fact that Jesus did not hesitate. I mean, think about it. Jesus could have looked at him and just said, Oh, now you come to me. Now you come to me. Last resort kind of a thing. Don't we do that to each other? Oh, they waited till the last resort. Wait to use Jesus till the last resort. You know what? Who doesn't care? Jesus. But we do that to each other. Oh, you have to wait till the last resort. I've done it myself. I've waited till Jesus is the last resort. And guess what? He has never once turned me away. He says, like he says to this guy, he goes, he went with him. I love that part. That's it. He went with him. And every time I've used Jesus as a last resort, he's went with me. He's okay with it. Stop believing the lies that Satan tells you through other people or just in your head that Jesus doesn't want to deal with you because he's the last resort. He doesn't care. As long as you get to him, he doesn't care at all. So now we're hearing with our hearts. Let's go on to verse 35 to 43. And finish this story. It says, while he was speaking with them, there came the rulers from the ruler's house, some who said, your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further? But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the ruler of the synagogue, do not fear, only believe. And he allowed no one to follow him except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. They came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and Jesus saw a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. And when he had entered, he said to them, why are you making a commotion and weeping? The child is not dead. She's sleeping. And they laughed at him. But he put them all outside and took the child's father and mother and those who were with him and went in where the child was. Taking her by the hand, he said to her, Talitha kumi, which means, little girl, I say to you, arise. And immediately the girl got up and began walking, for she was 12 years of age, and they were immediately overcome with amazement. And he strictly charged them that no one should know this and told them to give her something to eat. So while he's there and they finally some the rulers, the people from the ruler's household comes in and goes, you're too late. Don't worry. Don't bother to teach her anymore. She's dead. And Jesus is sitting there and he's listening. Now remember, there's crowds of people all around him. And so Jesus hears him, and so before they could say anything more, Jesus stops them. And Jesus goes, hey, whoa, 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 whoa. Don't fear. Just believe. Just believe. And that word there is actually a verb that says keep on believing. Keep on believing. You've believed this far. Don't stop now. Keep on believing. Cue the journey music. Don't stop. Believe it. I mean, it's wholesome, good music. I keep trying to tell people. Journey's awesome, right? Christian music right there. Don't stop believing. That's all I could think about because I'm immature. Anyway, so here he said, don't stop believing. Just keep doing it. Keep doing it. And what happens after that? Jesus gets a little attitude right here. It says that he only let Peter, James, and John go with him from that point on. Peter, obviously you're kind of thinking, ooh, that's sketchy. I've read about him a lot, and he's kind of different. Didn't Jesus call him Satan one point? And then he says, James and John, sons of thunder, I'm going to need you for this one. I mean, I love the fact that he gave them that name. It's the sons of thunder. So he says, guys, just we're the only ones going on this one. And they're like, that's right. That's right. We're the only ones going. Y'all stay here because we are muy importante. Right? And so they decide they're gonna go on. And Jesus goes, that's it. I'm just taking these guys. Now they get there and they have these three traditions of mourning. The three traditions of mourning, one of them is rending of the garments. And one of them was where they would cut a hole right about here over the heart for the parents of the child. And they would cut this hole over the heart, and then they would, and if it was anybody else other than that, they cut the hole over here. And they could see the rend right here, the tear in the garment. And then if they were a woman, the woman would tear the garment, depending on if she was a parent or not. And then she would take the garment, turn it inside out, and put it backwards. And then on her outer garment, that was her undergarment, on the outer garment, then she could, so that she didn't show any kind of flesh. And so then they had let that go that way for about 7 days, and then they would sew it up loosely so that people could still see that something has happened terribly to these people. Wouldn't that be nice sometimes that when we're out there and somebody's acting just completely out of sorts and you'd be able to look on them, oh, they've lost somebody recently. That's hearing with your heart. Something has happened to them. Maybe we could just start thinking the best in people that way. People don't just act crazy for no reason. People don't have attitudes and just for no reason. I mean, my wife says I do, but I mean, sometimes you never know. At the house, it's a little different, right? And so here they are. They have this happening there. Then they have the flute players that come in. These are professions, actually. The flute players come in, and you can have no less than 2 and no more than 10. Because the poor people could afford maybe 2 flute players, but then the rich people were bringing in a whole orchestra. And they're like, okay, now this become a show, just 10. And then they had these wailers, which are what we find here, the profession. It was a profession among women. They were professional. I mean, think about the actors and actresses that you watch on there, and you know that they didn't lose a child. You know that they haven't gone what they're going through in real life, and all of a sudden, they're just weeping, and you're sitting there weeping in the theater, and just it's just terrible. And how they can all of a sudden just go, cut! That's the scene, and all of a sudden, they get to go back to just normal. That's what these people were. Actors, actresses. And they come in and they would learn all about the family. And then they would come in and even say the names and then just, oh, just wail. That would be hilarious for me to see. Somebody has no idea about my child or about my dad or whatever. And just come in. And can you imagine? I lost my dad a couple years ago. And I can imagine somebody, I go into the nursing home and there's these people. Oh! I was like, did you know him? Well, no. But I was paid to come in here and do this. Get out! I mean, what are you doing? For us, that would be just so awkward and weird. But for them, it was absolutely what they were used to. And so Jesus walks into the scene with Peter, James, and John. And he comes in there, and they're doing it. Oh, my gosh, he's dead. And what's Jesus do? He says, shh, she's not dead, she's sleeping. She's just sleeping. And what's it say that they did after that? They laughed at him. So you can imagine. Oh no. She's sleeping. You're an idiot. All of a sudden they went from crying to laughing just like that. And then what does it say that Jesus did? He put them outside. I love that part. Because that word there in the Greek is ekbalo, which means to eject or force. He ejected them. He said, you get out of here. What was Jesus doing? Now, does anybody think of somebody forcing somebody out or ejecting them that it's just kind and gentle? I don't think that. Oh, Jesus would never force somebody out like that. Oh, yes, he would. The Jesus I serve is cool. He would be like, no, get out of here. I'm not having any more of this stuff. I'm not having any more of this stuff. You know what I can, when I hear with my heart, you know what I hear there? Surround yourself with people who believe. Jesus wasn't taking any of that junk inside of there. He said, I know that these 3 men with me believe. I know that the parents believe because he came and got me. And you're the only ones going in there with me. And he put them out. So surround yourself with people who believe, not to guarantee an outcome, but to guarantee an overcome. I know that people come in and they read these scriptures and they go, well, this is what I have to do in order for my child to live. And I've been with people as their child were not saved. And I'm questioning it in my head of going, why? What did we do wrong? Why did we not have enough faith? What happened, Lord? Why did this child still die? I don't understand it. There's some things that I'm just never going to understand. And that's rough. That's tough. But he never promised me that I would understand everything. He did promise me, though, that we'll be overcomers. And we could overcome these things called life. And to me, that's what makes heaven even more attractive, is when I know that one day, like we just sang, there'll be no more sorrow. There'll be no more tears. And I'll be with those loved ones that I've lost and those little kids that I've watched pass away and die. That's terrible. watching a little five-year-old, 4 years, die of cancer. So there was nothing left of her but skin and bones. I got mad at God. I wonder, how can you do that? But then on the other side of it, I think, how lucky is that little girl to be in the arms of Jesus and never have to deal with heartache, never have to deal with pain and sorrow ever again. And one day, I'll get to hold her in my arms again, and we'll hang out. That's the promise that we have through Jesus Christ. At the end of all this stuff, we read this story. Something happened in the middle of this whole story. Something happened in the middle of the story. I want to read in verse 25 to 34. Some of you caught it that I skipped some verses. We're going to go back, and they're like, you skipped verses. I can't believe it. Oh, my gosh. Well, it'll be all right. In the middle of this, while Jesus is dealing with this guy, Jairus, in the middle of it, he's starting to go follow him, and in the middle of it says this, and there was a woman who had a discharge of blood for 12 years, who had suffered much under many physicians and had spent all that she had, and she was no better, but rather grew worse. She had heard the reports about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. For she said, if I touch even his garments, I will be made well. And immediately the flow of blood dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. And Jesus, perceiving in himself that power had gone out from him, immediately turned about in the crowd and said, who touched my garments? And his disciples said to him, you see the crowd pressing around you, and yet you say, who touched me? And he looked around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease. This woman had an issue of blood for 12 years. 12 years. That's a long time. That's a long time, and it would have been completely humiliating for her to go through. 12 years of having something go wrong. But it was not something uncommon. And in the Talmud, they had at least 11 issues for curing these kinds of diseases. Some of them were realistic. Some of them were just hypotheticals. But as I was reading through these lists, you got to hear a couple of them because they're ridiculous. One of them says that if you have these issues of blood, what you need to do is carry the ashes of an ostrich egg in a linen bag in the summer, or if it's winter, in a cotton bag. I got an issue of blood. Oh, what you got to do is you got to get an ostrich egg, silly. Then you take the ashes and you put it, oh, it's got to be a linen bag. What's wrong with you? That's why you're not healed. Second one's worse. I don't even know what a barley corn is. Anybody know what a barley corn is? Carry a barley corn, which has been found in the dung of a white female donkey. What are you doing? I need this from this poo so that I can be healed of my blood issue. How'd that work for you? It didn't, but my hand stinks. I mean, think about this stuff. And they came up with this stuff. Who comes up with this? Can you imagine Satan laughing at them? They actually cooked the egg of the ostrich and took its ashes. They actually went through dung looking for a barley corn. Oh, it's a beetle? Oh, okay. It's a beetle. Look, I'm learning stuff here today. And so, I Googled it. He Googled it right here. That's how fast he is. And so here he is. And so the worst part of this disease actually was that it rendered a woman unclean. And because she was rendered unclean, she could not go into church. She could have no fellowship with anybody because she was unclean. And anytime you're unclean, you'd go around people. You have to scream out, unclean. So can you imagine for 12 years, she couldn't be around her family. She couldn't be around church. She couldn't get to her God. And if she touched anything, she had to go through the ritual of making her everything clean again. If she touched the sheets on a bed and slept on them, they had to clean them and go through this ritual. Everything she touched, her life was absolutely miserable. So guess where she's at? She's desperate again, isn't she? 12 years. I don't even know what to do. I love the shot that they took at the doctors. I mean, he kind of takes a little shot at him there, doesn't he? He says, she went to all the doctors. They basically robbed her of all her money, and she didn't even get better. She got worse. That's like going to a lawyer. Gave him all my money. I still lost the case. So he takes a little shot at the doctors, which I thought was funny. And so then you got to picture this scene of everyone pushing in on Jesus. Everybody wanted a piece of Jesus. And they're crowded around him, and everybody's touching him, and everybody's getting all around him. And she's like, if I could just touch a piece of his clothing, it will heal me. Woo, that's big right there. And then if we could picture it, finally the woman gets to touch him, and I would imagine that time stood still for her and for Jesus. Everybody's, and she finally touches the hem of his garment. All of a sudden, she says she felt it inside of her body that something happened. And then Jesus makes a ridiculous statement. Who touched me? And all the disciples are going, everybody! What do you mean, who touched you? And Jesus goes, I felt power go out through me, through my clothes. She didn't even touch his body. She touched his clothes. And he says, I felt power go out from me. And he stopped everything right then and there. I mean, he could have just kept going. Okay, power went out of me. So I healed somebody, I guess. I don't know what happened. But he says, stop, stop, stop. Somebody touched me. Somebody touched me. And they're all like, everybody is touching you, sir. I don't know what you're talking about. Everybody touched you. He goes, no, something happened. And he would not go on until finally she said, it was me. And you notice that it said that she came to him in fear and trembling. Why would she feel fear and trembling? She wasn't supposed to be there. Legally, she was not supposed to be there. And so at that moment, Jesus comes up there and she finally just says, here's the story. Nobody could heal me for 12 years, and I just got desperate. And Jesus comes in there, and he goes, you know what? Right now, you're the only person that matters right here. You're the only person that matters. At that moment, she was all that mattered. And you can imagine, we know that she was broke. She had no money left. And there's probably a very wealthy man, Jairus, waiting to go have Jesus heal the daughter. And Jesus goes, wait a second. Just wait a second. I'm going to deal with her right now. And this poor, broken woman who has nothing left is standing there next to this guy who's very wealthy, and Jesus treats both of them equally, especially a woman at that day. And he treats both of them absolutely equally, and he recognizes that power has left him. It costs Jesus something for him to heal people. It costs him something. Something happens inside of his body, and it costs him something. When he says, I go out there and I'm doing all these things, it wore him out because power was leaving him. And I don't know if you've ever done something for anybody that mattered, but if it doesn't cost you anything, it probably doesn't matter. I mean, it's amazing that when you go out and you do ministry, and when you're done, it's just like you are exhausted. You are absolutely exhausted because it costs us something. And there she is again, last resort. And Jesus goes, you matter. You matter here. Even though you're unclean, even though you're not supposed to be here. And here he is. And how does he address her? As daughter. She comes in fear and trembling at Jesus' feet. And she goes, I did it. And I believed. And he goes, sweetheart, it's okay. It's okay. It's going to be okay. Your faith has made you well. I can't believe how much faith you just had. Even though I'm your last resort, I can't believe how much faith you just had. Enough to come up to me and touch just my clothes. I think that that's one of the most incredible things that I hear about. Is that if I could have the faith to just touch Jesus' clothes, I want to go through this year having enough faith to just get to Jesus somehow. Where it touches me and it changes me. That woman was never, ever the same. And neither was Jairus. He got his daughter back. It's pretty amazing. That's pretty amazing when we think about all of that. I had a woman that was in my, I'm going to bring the band up as we close this out. But I had a woman that was in my office asking for some help last year, which could have been 3 days though. But last year, this woman came to my office. She was asking for some help, and someone pulled up, and I knew who it was. They were just coming to see me at the office. And whenever they saw the person pull up in a pretty nice car, she said, I'll leave because I know that that person's more important than I am. I was like, what are you talking about? What do you mean that person's more important than you? Well, I just know that I'm asking for help, and they probably need your time, and that's a more important thing. I said, it's not more important. And that person that's coming in would never, ever think that about you. Matter of fact, that person's going to come in here, and we're going to help you. We're going to help you, but we have this mentality that my behavior is what makes Jesus want me. That is never going to be the case. Jesus wanted you before your behavior was bad. It says that while we were yet sinners, he loved us. And he died on the cross. It's not about our behavior. Praise God. Aren't you thankful for that? It's not about your behavior. I mean, knowing Jesus should make our behavior different, but when you focus on your behavior, guess what happens? Your focus is off of Jesus. And you can't hear with your heart. And so may our goal that be we listen to God and we treat each other like Jesus did with and hear them each other with our hearts. That we can be so in tune with Jesus that no matter what comes our way, we can deal with it. I think that's going to make a great year if we can do that. And as we continue to grow as Journey Fellowship, not in numbers, but in our hearts spiritually. That's all he cares about. If we had four people in here and we were hearing the Lord and we were doing what he told us to do, that's what's called success. That's success. Do I want this place to be full and overrunning? I don't know. I used to think I did. But that sounds like a lot of work. But we're making moves and we're asking God, what's next for us in 2022? And we really feel with all of our hearts it's children's ministry. And we're praying, and we know that you're praying with us from the bulletin, that you guys are praying with us about giving us direction. What's next for us with the children? And it's time for us to get a move on it. And God's starting to speak to our hearts, and he's starting to speak to us, and I think it's going to be amazing. We tell these little kids so that when they get older, they go, you know what? I remember when they told me about Jesus. And I do have hope, and I will never be without hope. Love on these little kids. So I hope that we hear with our ears. I mean, with our hearts and not just our ears this year. And please know that there's a prayer team of people that will be up here after service. And if you want prayer for yourself, you want prayer for somebody that you know, just come up and talk to them. They are prayer warriors. And let me tell you something, God's bringing up a whole group of prayer warriors. And we're always putting in requests. Please pray for us in this area. Put away your prejudice. Put away your pride. Put away your dignity. Doesn't matter. He's our only hope. He's our only hope. Let's pray. Lord, thank you so much for getting us through another year. And Lord, in this year 2022, may we come to you, not so that we could guarantee some results, but Lord, that we could know that we can overcome anything with you in our lives. And I pray that you help us to hear and to love each other like you do. And thank you for giving us the example of Jesus and all the different examples that we can read through the scriptures that point to Jesus and the way that Jesus represented you right. So thank you, God, for loving the world so much that you sent your only Son, that whoever believes in him will not perish but have everlasting life. We love you and we thank you. In Jesus' name, amen. Would you please stand for our last song?